Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, so we got Rob and Matt are back here from the Stardom podcast, Stardomcast. And you guys were on, gosh, it probably was 6 months ago to a year ago or something along those lines. But to say the least, a lot has been going on in the Stardom world over the last few months. So rather than trying to explain it myself, why don't you guys kind of take over and explain what's been going on with the former biggest women's company in Japan and possibly future as well?
It's certainly been a time for Stardom fans. So much has happened, like, just in the last couple of weeks. Obviously, Bushiroad had purchased Stardom back in 2019. Rossi Ogawa, who is a legend in Joshi wrestling, he started the company back in 2011, was bought out in 2019, was kept on as a director, sort of a producer of sorts. But over the last couple of months, through various backstage unhappinesses, let's say, a split has happened where Rossi was fired in February, started his own company, Dreamstar Fighting Marigold. And that was announced, that was earlier this month, wasn't it, Matt? 15th of April, I think.
Yeah.
And it took a load of stars with him from Stardom, and they're running their first show on the 20th of May. So it caused a lot of turbulence in the Stardom world, but yeah, it's been a time, hasn't it, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, something else you have to think about. Rossi's been the main guy there since, for 13 years since he started the company. And then even when Bushiroad purchased the company in 2019, he still pretty much had creative control. And what had happened over the last 9 or 10 months, all of his booking decisions that he would have, he'd give him all of his booking decisions, and 80-90% of them would just get overturned. Literally to the point where it's like, I don't understand why we were doing this. Some of this stuff doesn't make sense. I'm building up certain people to go for certain championships, to have a long championship title run. And then all of a sudden the carpet would get swept underneath them. So he was burnt out after about five or six months ago, about the end of the summer, beginning of the fall last year. He just kind of didn't want to be there. Some of the wrestlers didn't want to be there as well. The contracts were up at the end of March. So Rossi decided that he was looking in to start his own wrestling company. However, it did look like when they had their anniversary show, the Supreme Fight show in Nagoya, that at the very end of the main event, which was a phenomenal main event between Micah defending the World of Stardom Championship against Saya Kamatani, after the match was over, everybody got in the ring and took a group picture. And I remember sending the picture to you, Rob, and I said, I think with all the heat going on, maybe it simmered down. Maybe they had a conversation where, hey, obviously communication's key. Maybe everybody sat down and they aired their grievances, and Stardom's going to go their proper way and everything's going to be good. Maybe a cooler head would prevail. And then about 12 hours later, we find out that Rossi Ogawa was let go of the company. And to the surprise of anybody that's ever been on the internet or social media, everybody melted down. They thought that Rossi would never book again. They thought Stardom would be going under in 3 or 4 months. But obviously, that was not the case, because the new booking committee that came in, who really have never booked any wrestling whatsoever, they've been booking Stardom for the last 2 or 3 months, and it's really been almost home run after home run. They've been selling out the house shows, or we call the Stardom World shows. Everything they're doing to building up certain championship matches has been really, really done properly. They're building up younger talent. They're doing a good job getting the one heel stable, a widow tie, over, and by not cheating in front of the referee, which I hate. But they've been doing a really, really good job with this company. But kudos to Rossi, who just a few weeks ago made his announcement that they are going to be starting their own company, Marigold Professional Wrestling. And they sold out Cork and Hall, 1,400 tickets in a matter of, what was it, Rav, 30, 40 minutes?
They sold 1,400 tickets in half an hour, which obviously, you've got huge names that have gone over. Utami Aijista, Julia is the big name, obviously, who is also heavily rumored to be heading to NXT in the next couple of months. She is signed with WWE, but she's helping out with this company first.
Let me just stop you guys here, because you guys have unpacked like 1,000 things that we can discuss here.
Apologies.
Yeah. Like let's go back to, because I don't think when we spoke last, and if we did, it was just starting, to when Bushiroad bought Stardom. So what was kind of, now obviously Bushiroad owns New Japan Pro Wrestling. They're you know, the financial bosses and technically the bosses as well. What were the reasons, as far as you know, why Bushiroad wanted to buy Stardom also? Because that's a huge step forward for the Japanese way. Because as we know, they're very far behind in certain things. And women's wrestling was always kind of the also-ran when it comes to men's companies. I know when I worked for Tenru's company, we were with Neo. I think the name of the company was, we worked together with Neo, and it was like, you know, here's the obligatory women's match, second on the card. Obviously you're talking All Japan Women, my favorite wrestler of all time, Minami Toad, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What was Bushiroad's mindset in buying Stardom and almost kind of putting it with New Japan? And did the public accept that, want it? Was it a success?
I think the main thing for Bushiroad was they had success with New Japan. Joshi was starting to come a little bit more into the public sort of. So you'd had All Japan, which you've already mentioned, All Japan Women's incredible company, the trailblazer for women's wrestling. So that went under. You've got Gaia Japan, that had gone under, and so many companies were treading water. And you've got a couple, you've got like Ice Ribbon, which started, I think, in 06. You've got a couple, Sendai Girls, for example, Mako Satomura's promotion.
Can I just say, I love the name Ice Ribbon. What a great name for a company. What a great Japanese-English name for a company, right?
Absolutely. I mean, even Dreamstar Fighting Marigold. It's such a great name.
Rolls off the tongue, right, buddy? Rolls right off the tongue.
Absolutely. I think we said last time that they just seem to put names together, and that's a continuation.
That's
of
how
that.
It works. That's right.
In terms of Stardom, it was a promotion that not only had stuck around in the public consciousness, but was growing from strength to strength to strength. They'd managed to survive what was a PR nightmare in the Gasly match, which obviously got them a huge of negative press. They survived two of their biggest stars in Kairi Sane and Io Sky leaving to go to the WWE, and they were able to rebuild. They were still doing really good numbers, and Bushiroad wanted to capitalize on that. You know, Rossi was willing to sell in order to up things like production and things like that. So it was a good sale for both parties. And I think, you know, you spoke about Neo, and Neo's a great example of that. That was sort of a startup promotion out of the ashes of, you know, the glory days of All Japan and Gaia, and sort of one that sort of flickered out and died. And Stardom didn't do that, and I think Bushiroad wanted to enhance that and sort of bring it into line with New Japan, maybe as the start of some sort of wrestling empire.
Yeah, and we've seen this happen quite a few times, especially in the history of wrestling, when a bigger corporation takes over the smaller one and says, sure, Rossi, you'll still get to book everything. And then you're mentioning that he's not, that they're kind of overriding it and kind of taking it over. I guess, is there certain examples of this that we know of, or is it just an overall frustration from Rossi to know that he's really not in charge?
Obviously, the big hot topic in pro wrestling, especially women's wrestling, is Julia. You know, she just showed up on the NXT pay-per-view WrestleMania weekend, which Rob and I were actually in the building for. She got a great reception in the town of Philadelphia. But Julia, she had a year and a half chase to win the big championship, the red belt, the World of Stardom Championship. And she had it only 4 months. And then she lost the two. And you won't find a bigger, other than Stardom's accountant, you won't find a bigger Tam Nakano fan than me. But she loses it to Tam Nakano, again, after chasing this belt, Chris, for a year and a half, finally gets the big win on the big show at the end of December, and then loses it to Tam after only 4 months and only two successful title defenses. So that was one kind of a head-scratcher there. And then kind of the reasoning that we were told is like, well, Tam's thinking about retiring in a year or two, so we figured let's give her this run with the belt. To me, that kind of just doesn't make sense. I think there'd be more money in the Julia long-term program. But that was just one of the examples. And there were just certain things that like Rossi didn't like, or the fact that he would kind of give his ideas and last minute the rug would get pulled out from underneath him. And then he just got frustrated and burnt out and was like, pretty much, why am I giving you all my great ideas if you're just going to overturn them kind of the last minute? But there's a couple other reasons that I know that Rob will probably get into as well.
I mean, the Julia one, we'll sort of talk a little bit about when We talk about Julia going over to NXT because I do want to talk a little bit more about that. But in terms of other decisions, I mean, we've just had in December, Stardom runs a huge show in Sumo Hall, Dream Queendom. And at the end of that show, the red belt had been vacated, the top championship had been vacated, and there was a match between Suzu Suzuki, who had won the 5-star Grand Prix, and Micah. And if you are to believe reports, Rossi wanted Suzu Suzuki to walk out as the red belt champion, and Bushiroad were pushing for Micah. Basically, it came to a head, and ultimately, Micah came out of that as the champion. And I think that's was probably the straw that broke the camel's back in terms of Rossi's faith in Bushiroad. Although apparently there was talk of Marigold starting before that. But I imagine having your authority undermined on your biggest show of the year, and in terms of your biggest champion as well, I imagine that shows you just how little Bushiroad thought Rossi had left in terms of the company. But yeah, so I think that, and there was communication issues, huge communication issues between Bushiroad and the Stardom wrestlers that was starting to cause all sorts of travel issues and stuff with fans and, you know, people saying that stuff was going to be delivered and it wasn't. And it just seemed like the wheels were coming off somewhat. And yeah, I think Dream Queendom proved to be the final straw. And eventually the president of Bushiroad fight, he was sort of quietly sort of escorted from the premises, and the current president, who Matt mentioned briefly, Taro Okada, he's now in charge, and is for all intents and purposes, for someone who has never booked wrestling, is doing a tremendous job.
Let's talk a little bit about the history of Rossi Ogawa. I mean, I've heard his name obviously from Stardom, but you mentioned that he's kind of one of the, I don't know if he's a pioneer of Joshi wrestling, but he's been around the scene for a long time. Kind of give us a little bit about his background.
He's Joshi royalty, for lack of a better phrase.
And just so people know, Joshi is female wrestling in Japan, just in case someone doesn't know that term.
Yes, correct. Yes, it is. He started out as a photographer for All Japan Women's back in the 80s and then became a manager, I believe, for the Crush Girls, which is Chikusa Nagayo and Lioness Suzuka. Huge, huge Japanese team.
Huge.
Yeah, absolutely massive. Some people believe responsible for the big Joshi boom in the 80s. So he was in charge there, then moved on to be a producer for All Japan. Once he left there, he had a finger in a lot of pies, for lack of a better phrase, went on to form Arsian 2001 with Aja Kong. That ended rather bitterly, which is unfortunate. It means we haven't seen Aja Kong in Stardom until this Saturday, where she'll be in the tag match. But then, obviously, from there, Rossi met with a woman called Fuka Kakimoto, who was training Class of Rookies, invited him to the trainees to sort of have a look at them, and there the idea of Stardom was born, alongside Nanai Takahashi. And it's actually those three, Rossi, Nanai Takahashi, and Fuka, who have actually come full circle, and it's those three that are involved in Marigold as well. So it's a nice little sort of full circle story for Rossi there.
It's amazing how pro wrestling works.
Was it a big shock to hear that Rossi was kind of fired or you know, removed, shall we say, from Stardom?
Yeah, I mean, it sure was. Again, he's the one that started it 13 years ago. Even when Bushiroad bought the company in 2019, he was still running it. He is literally the face of Stardom. If anybody that's ever seen a Stardom championship match, whether it's for the world belt, the wonder belt, the tag belts, he always does the belt presentation. It's always him in the middle holding either the single belt or the two belts for the tag belt. So he's always there. And it was me and Robin made mention when they had the first big championship match without Rossi Ogawa, like, it just feels different because that was part of the presentation. It was part of the celebration. It was part of the pageantry. What made the match and the championship mean so much important before the belt, before the match, that they would do the photo where you would have the champion on one side, the challenger on the other side, and Rossi, you know, in a full suit and suit and tie, the whole nine, holding the championship belts. It was, you know, he was always just the face of the company. He was always there. You'd always see him sitting at the timekeeper's table, taking notes, watching every match. He was very involved in to make sure that not only were the wrestlers, you know, happy and safe, but from the production crew as well. You know, Rob and I have been lucky that we've been able to make friends with some of the people working behind the scenes in Stardom, and have nothing but great things to say about Rossi, making sure he took care of everybody. It didn't matter if you were wrestling in the ring or if you were pulling cable cords.
I completely agree with that. But for the girls and the wrestlers, Rossi was that constant. As I mentioned before, Stardom have been through some terrible times. And then, of course, during the pandemic, you've got Hanakamura's untimely death. You've got Arisa Hoshiki, who was a huge part of the roster. She retired due to injury. But Rossi, no matter what has gone on in Stardom, Rossi was always there. And so many of the wrestlers viewed him as that father figure. He was that constant that was there throughout. And to then have him not be there anymore, he just left a gaping hole, not just because of his booking, not just because of his wrestling production skills, not just because he was the owner of Stardom, but as a father figure for the wrestlers, it left a massive gap. I mean, it was sort of on the wall that he was going, but literally Matt mentioned that photograph after the 10th, the 13th anniversary show or the 14th anniversary show. And he was literally gone straight after that. They literally got them out of the ring, had the meeting, and he was gone. So it was pretty unceremonious, which is a shame when you consider what he's given the company.
So how many, like, you know, because I saw this quite a bit in the early 90s. I mentioned WAR, which was Tenryu had left All Japan and went to SWS and started WAR. And then suddenly, you know, Fuyuki leaves WAR and then he starts his offshoot. And then somebody leaves Fuyuki's company. They start an offshoot. And suddenly you've got, you know, literally, I think at the time there was 20 men's companies all across the board. For Stardom, you know, for Rossi to start up Marigold, two questions for you. First of all, and you guys might not know this, but how hard was it for him to get sponsorship? Because that's what it all works on, is you need a sponsor to kind of help you fund your company. It seems that Marigold started fairly quickly after he was dismissed from Stardom. Am I right about that?
Yeah. From what we are led to believe, he is the main sort of money behind Marigold.
Oh, okay.
He obviously is. From the Bushiroad sale, he earned a healthy amount of money.
Any idea how much they sold it for?
I don't, I'm afraid.
Gotcha.
But I know it was a healthy amount of money. And he sort of plowed a lot of that money into the launch of Marigold. In terms of the company, I know that the company was being sort of whispered about as far back as, I believe it was announced, it was in the Wrestling Observer newsletter, that it was back in November that they started talking about it. So I believe it was probably about then. I wish I did know how much. Maybe one day that price will come out.
And so how many of the girls left with Rossi to start the Marigold?
Really, when this split first happened, the first thing that we thought of, this would be very similar to the All Japan Pro Wrestling Noah split in 2000,
right,
which, you remember, Misawa took 90% of the roster and the TV deal. That's how big of a star Mitsuharu
was. Crazy.
Was.
Yes.
Yeah,
crazy.
I mean, that's insane. To put it in American wrestling terms, think of when Hulk Hogan left WWF to go to CW, and just think of that the USA deal went with him. That's basically how big this. And we were getting texts constantly. It was in messages like, you know, Stardom going to go under. The one thing Stardom do with their due diligence, Chris, is they knew that this was happening back in January, early February, and the contracts were up in March. So nobody was able to negotiate with Rossi until the end of March. They had a good 6-7 weeks to negotiate with these wrestlers. And we heard a lot of big names were looking to go to Rossi's company. But ultimately, it was Julia, Tommy Hayashis, who were the two big main eventers, Mirai, who's somebody that held the Wonder of Stardom Championship and somebody they can plug into the main event,
mm-hmm.
Mai Sakurai, who's a really, really good mid-card wrestler that has a really, really fancy gimmick, and then Yuzuki, who's like a super rookie. So really, from what it looked like it was going to happen come the beginning of February to what actually really happened, it was only five wrestlers with two really main eventers. So it was, I thought it was really good due diligence on the part of Stardom, especially Mr. Okada, to be able to sit everybody down and kind of figure out what they needed to keep them into Stardom. And Stardom was able to keep a good crop of their main eventers.
Nanai Takahashi also was sort of a fringe member of Stardom. She also left. So, you know, to go from, again, Matt mentioned, we'd heard all sorts of names and we were worried at one point that Stardom was going to be gutted when they finally announced Marigold. But for Stardom to,
right,
you know, Utami is a huge miss. She's 25, is super talented and only has upside, and she is a future icon of any promotion that she wrestles in. Julia, they knew, was leaving anyway. So I feel like that's, even though she's a huge star, and I'm sure when she comes over to America full-time is going to do fantastic things, Stardom had prepared for that anyway. So to only lose people from then, from Mirai from the upper mid card, Yuzuki, who is, as Matt mentioned, a super rookie, and then Mei Sakurai from the mid card. I think they actually did remarkably well to not lose more talent.
And then on the other side of the coin, who are going to be the top stars for Marigold? Who is Rossi able to take with him? I know Julia is one of them, but like you mentioned, she's just doing kind of a favor almost before she goes to WWE.
Yeah, Tommy Hayashista, I think, is going to be the one that's going to be pegged. I mean, that's the surefire slam dunk. Again, Yuzuki is a super rookie that within a year from now is somebody they can plug in the main event. They got a bunch of wrestlers from the Actress Girl promotion. A lot of their top talent went there. Unfortunately, I'm not that familiar with Actress Girls, but they also brought in a freelancer by the name of Sari, who used to wrestle in NXT. She's actually doing freelance work for both Stardom and for Marigold Wrestling. So, hey, good on her. You know, she's going to be getting paydays from the two biggest Joshi companies over in Japan. So, and something, too, you have to think about. Mayu Iwatani, her contract's a little bit different because she has a movie actually coming out sometime in May on her life. So they decided to extend her contract towards the end of the year. And Mayu is the golden goose. We don't know where she's going to end up when her contract goes. We do know she is going to get paid, and rightfully so, because she has earned every penny. So she's somebody that it'll be shown in the movie, Chris, that Rossi Ogawa is a father figure to her. She was a shut-in. She ran away from home. Rossi Ogawa is a father figure to her. So does she go with Rossi, or does she stay with Stardom? After all, her name is the icon of Stardom. So that's going to be a big get. And then depending on what Stardom does over the next 11 to 12 months, and depending on what Marigold happens the next to 11 to 12 months, all these girls' contracts in Stardom are going to expire the end of March 2025. So they do have a lot of power where it's just like, look, I don't like what's going on here. I can go over to Rossi's company, or they could tell Stardom, hey, I'll stay here, but you know, you have to put another zero on the checkbook, brother. So ultimately they're going to have the power, which is great. You love to see the wrestlers being able to get paid, because ultimately they're the ones that are putting their bodies on the line in that ring. So yeah, that's going to be an interesting time to see what happens over the next 10 to 12 months, that's for sure.
So is there enough of a fan base that can sustain both companies, or are people going to have to pick and choose, and one will thrive and one will not?
1,000%. 1,000%. It's just like the same thing. It's when somebody says, well, what are you watching, WWE or AEW? Why can't I watch both? And the same thing happened to us when we heard about this company. Me and Rob, we had a conversation. What do you want to do? I said, let's cover both. Why not? Let's cover both. And we were very adamant to our friends, both in Stardom and in Marigold, that we are going to be covering both the Marigold promotion and Stardom. So, yeah, there's a fan base definitely for both. You don't have to choose. I don't like that whole thing where it's like you don't have to choose. It's like, I'm going to choose pro wrestling, because pro wrestling is the greatest sport in the world. So that's what I'm choosing. I'm going to watch WWE. I'm going to watch AEW. I'm going to watch New Japan. I'm going to watch Impact if I have time, which I don't. I'm going to watch Marigold, and obviously I'm going to watch Stardom. And myself and Rob are going to cover both Marigold and Stardom. So there is definitely going to be a fan base that is going to be able to support both Marigold and Stardom. Chris, you mentioned the 90s. You wrestled a lot in Japan in the 90s. There was a lot of wrestling companies in the 90s, and they all did well. All Japan, New Japan, WWR, UWF, UWFI, FMW, All Japan Women's, they all drew really well. So it's like, yeah, why? The more the merrier, and the more places for wrestlers to work, the more than they can make a living.
Is there a television deal for Marigold? Did you mention that? I'm not sure if I heard that.
They have managed to get themselves a streaming deal on Wrestle Universe, which is the platform which Noah is on, DDT is on, TJPW's on. It's Cyber Agents sort of wrestling sort of thing. So Bushiroad have obviously got New Japan, I've got Stardom, Cyber Agent are the people in charge of Noah and things like that. And to get onto Wrestle Universe, which has come out on the Wrestling Observer newsletter today, actually, that Stardom have tried to get onto that platform, but Cyber Agent have chosen Marigold over Stardom, which I thought was interesting. But to get that deal is really, really good, because A, it's a fantastic platform which people have already got because of the amount of good promotions that are on there. The production is incredible, and that's something that is going to really up Marigold's game over Stardom. And then on top of that, they've announced that there's going to be English commentary as well. So A, Wrestle Universe is a lot more accessible to the Western world than Stardom world is. There's English commentary, which is obviously going to be a lot more accessible to the Western world than Stardom is. And on top of that, it's, like I said, a subscription service that a lot of people already have and is not expensive in the slightest. So rather than having to get another subscription to watch this promotion, you've already got it. So it is a huge get for Marigold. And that was a huge thing in the press conference when they announced the promotion, the fact that they were on Wrestle Universe and that's where their first show's taking place. That's where all shows going ahead are going to be on. That was the thing that people picked up on as a huge, huge get, more so than the wrestlers that they've been able to bring over, in my eyes, is the fact that they've been able to get onto Wrestle Universe.
So let's talk a little bit about Rossi and something that Kenny Omega said earlier this week about someday people will know the truth about Rossi. Now, Kenny's a very opinionated guy, not afraid to say what he thinks, newsflash. And Kenny obviously has a real connection with Joshi. To the point where when AEW first started, he was actually kind of booking the women's division with Riho and Shida. And then there was a couple other girls that were around as well. So Kenny might have a different opinion. Is there anything to what he's saying? And what exactly did he say? I didn't get a chance to really delve into it too much.
It was an interesting point from Kenny. He said he was answering a question about Marigold on one of his Twitch streams and sort of said a lot without saying very much, but alluded to there being something a little bit more sinister going on behind the scenes. Now, we actually talked about this on the latest episode of our podcast, didn't we, Matt? And sort of talked about, you know, there hasn't been allegations or anything like that, but, you know, it's a different fandom in Japan when it comes to women's wrestling. And I think one of the huge things was the bikini books that Stardom would occasionally market. Now, one thing that a lot of Joshi promotions do is that they start trainees very young. So I believe that the Marigold sort of advert for their dojo, the ages they were looking for were 13 to 30 to start your training. With it being that young, people obviously, it raised a couple of eyebrows, but you look at Joshi legends like Aja Kong, Manama Tiota, Jaguar Yokota, all started very, very, very young. The issue was that in a certain issue of this bikini magazine, it was believed that some of the girls who were underage were in suggestive clothing or whatever. It's not the case. We've actually had it confirmed by people in Marigold that nothing was done without parental consent. Everything was done above board. And I think before, you know, anything gets taken out of context or anything like that, the important thing is that we've mentioned Fuka Kakimoto, who came over from Actress Girls with the Actress Wrestlers. She has two girls under five. You know, if there was anything sinister going on, she's not putting her kids in any sort of danger or something like that, because, you know, the safety of your children is paramount. So, whether there is something to that, whether there is smoke and fire, we don't know. However, we've had a lot of people who support Rossi, nothing but good things said about Rossi. I know that there was something about Kenny saying that he stands with Asuka, obviously WWE's Asuka, formerly Kana, who wrote a manifesto before she went to the WWE about the state of Joshi wrestling, which was rumored to be about or to Rossi. And it wasn't.
What did Asuka say? I never saw that before.
Off the top of my head, it was more about the style of Joshi wrestling, sort of moving away from heavy hitting moves and more towards what they call the athletes, which are sort of actresses and athletes who are very attractive and very pleasing on the eye, moving towards that sort of...
The idol scene, Rob. The idol scene, right, buddy?
Absolutely. Rather than the actual legit wrestlers. Asuka had a problem with that and sort of called out a lot of the Joshi legends, Nanai Takahashi being a big name, in writing this manifesto before she went to WWE. Again, people believe that that was aimed at Rossi. It wasn't. It was aimed at Joshi legends like Nanai Takahashi.
It's interesting. So what you're saying, and it's, I see this because I was just in DDT wrestling Takeshita in November, and there Joshi's the big star was a athlete. What did you say? Actor?
Yes.
Athlete, yeah. Whatever the hell you just said. What did you say? What's it called?
Right. I can never get this right. I can never get my mouth around it. I can't get it right now. I said it right the first time.
But my point is that she had come from an acting background. Just as Shida has done that as well. Shida came from an acting background and got into wrestling and was very good at it. But it's just interesting to see that how it was in the States, which was all the diva era, which was pretty girls that were training to be wrestlers. And in Japan, it was the Manami Toyotas of the world that were just amazing, killer, crazy wrestling, and still pretty girls too, but it was based more around the athleticism. And then now you're saying when the WWE and AEW is more about the athleticism, that the Japanese style is more about the actor element of it, more of the model scene, athletes.
I think it went through that phase, certainly.
Right.
I think we are sort of moving away from that. And the difference is, even though these girls were considered more, you know, conventionally attractive and things like that, they were still trained to a high standard. And, you know, people like Tam Nakano, who is in Stardom, former idol, very, very, very good wrestler, one of the best women's wrestlers in the world. Yuzuki Aikawa, who the early years, the formative years of Stardom were based around, she was a graveyard idol, so like a pinup model to begin with, and then went into wrestling and was a very, very, very competent wrestler, very competent. So I think there was a balance that needed to be struck. And I think it did start to do that maybe in the late noughties, towards the more attractive girls, the graveyard idols, things like that. But I think it's sort of come to a point now where it's a balance of, yes, the girls are attractive, but they can also absolutely kick your ass. So I feel like that's the balance that has been struck now.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned Tam Nakano, Natsupoi, Saya Kamatani, all came from those idol backgrounds, but they're all three of some of the best wrestlers, male or female, not just in Stardom, but in the world. Yeah. So I think Rob hit it perfectly where there is the balance where they are beautiful ladies, but they are phenomenal in the ring. And like I said, yeah, they will absolutely knock your head off.
Let's talk about some of the girls that have left Stardom over the last 3 years and started working in the States. I mean, I think Mariah had just come to AEW. What do you think of her so far in AEW? Because when I first saw her, like, obviously you can tell she's got the Joshi background. I think the first match she had was against, like, I think her name is Queen Aminata, and they beat the shit out of each other. It was great. I was like, this is amazing. This is not what you would expect from girls that look like this, which of course I knew it because of Stardom, but I think she kind of really raised that bar of showing that Japanese experience. What do you think about Mariah so far?
I think she's hit an absolute home run. She can cut promos. Obviously she's very good in front of the camera. The camera loves her and she loves the camera. She's great in the ring. We knew us, you know, covering Stardom every show, we knew she was be showing up at AEW sometime soon. But the fact that the announcers basically said, hey, you know, she's from Stardom, the Stardom promotion, put her right with Toni Storm. And obviously myself and Rob and the diehard Stardom fans are like, well, Toni Storm, former World of Stardom champion, won the 5-star Grand Prix and the Cinderella tournament the same year, the only wrestler to do that. And they made mention. And even Mariah, when she was cutting those promos before she debuted in the ring, was like, I'm from Stardom just like you. I was a champion in Stardom just like you. So you've already had that connection to that background where it's just like, okay, here's somebody that can cut a good promo, is great at a gimmick, but can absolutely kick ass in the ring. And yeah, I think she's been doing nothing but fantastic work. And then they put her right with the big main eventer, you know, Toni Storm, and she's doing great with that timeless Toni Storm character, and she's a phenomenal in-ring competitor. So the fact that as soon as Mariah made debuts, they put her with the women's champion over there in AEW. So for me, it's been nothing but home run after home run. And now that they're bringing in her former tag partner, Mina Shirakawa, and they're doing a storyline there, it's really, really interesting with all the cross-brand promotion that they're doing with AEW and Stardom.
Yeah, it's interesting with Toni. She reminds me a lot of, let's say, like an Eddie Guerrero, for example, where she's got the work down pat, character's okay, and then suddenly it's the switch flips, and you get this idea, you know, Eddie with Latino Heat and Toni with Timeless, where like, okay, now the character takes over the work, which is what wrestling is all about. But when you have the foundation of being a great worker, you can pull that out whenever you want. And that's one thing I love about Toni, is like she has done this where the character is far bigger than the actual wrestler itself, but then she can go out and have a killer match with Thunder Rosa like she just did at Dynasty, because obviously she's got worldwide experience. But there's always something to me that people that really made it in Japan always have a little extra edge in the ring. Because it is a little bit more serious in Japan, and there's a lot more at stake being an in-ring performer there, and that stays with you for the rest of your career. I think it's one of the reasons why I still can work at the highest of levels at this point in time, because I have that foundation and upbringing in Japanese wrestling.
I completely agree. Completely agree. And actually, if you look at the progress, I think Mariah, was another one we met in over WrestleMania week, and she said that she was initially only supposed to do, I think, was it 3 months, the initial tour?
Yeah.
And after the first couple of weeks, they were like, actually, if you want to do, you know, more than that, if you want to stay on for 9 months, then you're more than welcome to, and really, really refine your in-ring skill. And that's the thing, like Tony is a fantastic wrestler. Like, I don't think anyone is going to debate that. She's a fantastic in-ring competitor, has always been a really good in-ring competitor.
Yes.
But what you've got to have to set yourself apart is that character. And I think Timeless Toni Storm has been that huge catalyst for her. And Mariah is the same. Mariah is really good in ring. She needed something. And now attaching her to Toni Storm, giving her that storyline with her and Mina Shirakawa, I think has really, really helped her. Because that 9 months that she was in Stardom, the difference from when she debuted in the January all the way through to when she finished the 5-star Grand Prix, she was like a completely different wrestler. And she openly admits that. She says the time in Stardom was incredible for her development. And you could see the matches that she was having, the way she was putting them together, the finishes, and the way she was connecting with the crowd that didn't speak English, but she was still able to make that connection with the crowd, really did speak volumes. You know, that Hannon match on the final night, she had a match with Hannon. Her final match in Stardom, crowd was crying, Hannon was crying, Mariah was crying, and it really did show that, you know, even though she doesn't speak Japanese, or a lot of Japanese at any rate, she was still able to connect with the audience. And that for me proved that she was ready to go to an AEW to really sort of refine that character aspect of it. And I think she's done a fantastic job. She really has.
Let's talk about Mina Shirakawa. We just saw her this past week on Dynamite. A lot of times we don't really build up the new people that come in and kind of know their background. So let's talk a little about her. So she was Mariah's tag partner in Stardom.
Yeah, they were a team called Rose Gold. Mina Shirakawa was the leader of a group called Club Venus. They split since broke off, and she's actually with the champion now, Micah, with EXV. But yeah, they were tag team champions for a little bit. They had a little bit of run with the Goddess of Stardom tag team championships and had great matches. One of the best matches, my favorite tag matches of the year was Mariah and Mina versus Natsupoi and Sarianu for the Goddess of Stardom Tag Team Championship. But yeah, they were literally, when Mina came back from her injury, she had an injury from a match with Saya Kamatani where she busted or broke her jaw. When she came back with a new look and started this new faction, and she had Zaya Brookside with her and Mariah May. And like Rob said just about 2 minutes ago, that Mariah from January up until like the summer just really, really worked at it, nose to the grindstone, worked really, really hard, and she became just a completely different in-ring competitor. And her and Mina Shirakawa clicked, not only, you know, what they did curtain to curtain, but bell to bell as well. And they've had some great matches as part of that tag team as Rose Gold. And if there is anybody, you know, if there's people that are looking for some really good matches for Mina Shirakawa that just saw her on AEW, you know, go and seek those matches out with her, Mariah May, as a tag team again, especially with those matches against Sarianu and Natsupoi.
So is Mina just kind of visiting AEW? Is she going to be here for a while? Do you know?
To my knowledge, it's going to be a case of parachuting her in for certain dates. I would very much like her not to go to AEW, at least not yet, simply from a selfish standpoint. But I think people have seen, you know, even people who aren't familiar with her have seen that she's another one that is a very charismatic and sort of eye-drawing personality. She's a big personality, and I think that's why her and Mariah May clicked so well when they debuted together. Not only is she, like I said, an incredibly big personality, her English is incredibly good.
Yeah, I spoke to her the other day, and she spoke very good English, which is really, really important when you come work in the States.
Absolutely. We've seen it with Julia. Julia has been taking, from what I believe, very intensive English lessons before she comes over to the States. Mina's English has always been very, very good, which I believe is why she comes over to the States with the rest of the Stardom roster to help with things like translations and things like that. But on top of the character, the charisma and things like that, which Mina had always had, she wasn't always lacking in the ring. That's not fair. But her in-ring came second to the personality and the charisma. However, in 2022, I'd say, during the 5-star Grand Prix tournament, she really, really just broke out of nowhere, just started having absolute bangers. And she's a very submission-based wrestler, will be targeting the knees, and you'll see that from matches in Dynamite and things like that. She began to innovate her offense, and we saw her pin Anna Jay with the Glamorous Collection Mina with that really really cool roll-up that she's innovated. And that sort of innovation in ring and the fact that she's expanding that moveset speaks to the confidence that she's got at the moment. And then again, attaching Mina to the Toni Storm and Mariah May story. You know, she's not just been, you know, put on the first match of Dynamite and just said, look, it's a Japanese wrestler. She's actually been attached to one of the biggest storylines in AEW, which is a credit to her, to be fair, because she doesn't feel like she's just sort of the side piece. She feels like a legitimate part of that story. And we saw Toni Storm come back to Stardom during the Stardom American Dream show. And they sort of teased something between Toni and Mina Shirakawa for the AEW Women's Championship. If that is to happen, I promise you that that match is going to be fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
Oh, I'm sure that's the plan. I'm sure that's the plan.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw, but you're in the ECW arena. I mean, it's jam-packed. And I've been lucky enough to be on both sides of the guardrail in the last 20 years. It was jam-packed. The crowd was so hot. First time Stardom had a show in the States in 5 years. And out of nowhere, Toni Storm comes out. The place goes nuts. She just put over her time in Stardom. And then it's basically almost they're fighting for Mariah May's love. And then Toni puts the belt right in Mina's face and says, the forbidden door, Mina, will always be open. And about 1,000 people in the legendary ECW arena, their heads exploded. Like, is this where we're going for New York? Because Philadelphia, New York, two big hot wrestling areas. They're not too far away from each other. So I'm like, are they planting the seeds for this Toni and Mina match? And it looks, you know, hopefully that's where we're going. Because I would love to see Mina and Toni Storm, you know, in New York in front of a couple thousand people. I think that's just going to get Mina Shirakawa over even more than she already is.
Is Mina still with Stardom or is she with Marigold?
Stardom. Yeah, she resigned. Yeah, she's. Rob mentioned she hopes that she stays with Stardom. From what I understand, she's with Stardom at least until March of next year. But, you know, who knows?
You've mentioned Julia a few times. Let's talk about her. I know last time we were on the show, we were talking about how much of a prospect she was. And it's like AEW got Mariah and she, Julia, decided to go with WWE. Do you know anything why she decided that? Has she spoken to that at all? And how do you think she'll do in that system?
There was a lot of frustration in terms of Julia. And Matt saw mentioned her red belt run. And I think a lot stems from that. So again, just very basically, the red belt's the top belt in Stardom. Julia debuted in Stardom at the end of 2019. It was a very messy debut. She was originally part of your favorite name promotion, Chris, Ice Ribbon. and she came over, but there was a lot of contention around the debut. It was very obvious from very early on that Stardom wanted to push Julia as the next top thing. The crowd were a bit reticent to accept it. Julia had to work very, very, very hard to win over the crowd. And it was a long sort of slog for her. Eventually, she got over and she got over big. She became this huge star in Stardom and it suddenly became a, when is she going to win that top prize? When is she going to get to that top prize? And it was the belief that once she eventually got there, she would hold the belt for, you know, a year at least, because we'd been building to that story. She won the belt in December 2022. Huge, huge moment. Really, really good match with Shuri at Dream Queendom. And then her run with the belt was over by the April, which sort of took everyone a bit by surprise. And then recently it's come out why that was. So I mentioned that Julia had left under contentious circumstances in Ice Ribbon. And she'd left with a lot of heat with a couple of the wrestlers. One name was Mai Yukihi, who came into Stardom at the early part of 2023 to work a couple of the tournaments and then to have a red belt match with Julia. Basically, I believe the idea was that Bushiroad wanted to really work that real life heat into a match. Julia did not want to do this. Mai Yukihi, to my knowledge, didn't want to lose. So Julia basically said to the Bushiroad brass, look, I don't want to do this. Again, this has all been reported in The Observer. I don't want to do this. I don't feel comfortable doing this. I don't feel safe doing this. Bushiroad basically said, if you don't do it, you know, we're going to take the belt off you. So Julia eventually did it. It went to a no contest. And then Julia then lost the belt the next month to Tam, which, again, to have that big build to Julia finally winning the belt and then to have it sort of pulled from under you, I think that was the start of the frustration. There was then some issues, as I mentioned earlier on the episode, about communication between higher-ups at Bushiroad and the wrestlers. And I think all of it just led to a point where she was like, you know what, I'm done. You know, I've done everything I need to do now. I've won the five-star Grand Prix. I've won the red belt. I've won the white belt. I've won the Cinderella tournament. There's nothing left for me to do. You know, I'm going to go out. I'm going to try and expand. I'm going to spread my wings. I do think, and I could be wrong, it could be my bias, but I do think had that run gone better with the red belt, the top belt in Stardom, had she had that year-long reign, had she had the matches that we knew she was capable of, I don't think that we'd have seen her leave, or at least leave yet. However, here we are, and she's officially signed with WWE, Matt.
I think eventually she was going to leave because I think she looked at Io and Kairi, again, two huge stars for Stardom. Obviously, Kairi leaving in 2017, Io leaving the next year in 2018. I think she looked at like, okay, I did everything I could in this big company in Japan, Stardom. I want to expand my horizons and go over to the biggest wrestling company in the world, the WWE. Io's been able to do it. Obviously, Io's had a huge year. Kairi just came back. Kairi's doing fantastic. One half of the WWE Women's Tag Team Champions. Io obviously had a big, big match at WrestleMania against Bayley. So I think that's where Julia saw where she was going. And Julia was, and Rossi, they both were at WrestleMania. And they both had press passes, not press passes, performance badges. Yeah, and they were in one of the skybox. And Julia came out, and she did say after watching Io's match, she knew this is where she had to be. Again, we mentioned we were there at the NXT show on that WrestleMania Saturday at the Wells Fargo Center, 14, 15,000 people. And they showed Julia on camera, and the place went nuts. Considering the fact that she's wrestled in front of, a couple thousand people here or there. So the fact that 14, 15,000 people in Philadelphia knew who she was. How do I think she's going to do? I think she's going to do great, especially with the newer people booking WWE. It does seem like Triple H likes to push the Joshi wrestlers. Look what he did in NXT with Asuka, with Kairi, with Io. Now he's, from what I understand, he's pretty much the head mucky muck over there. And look who's on TV all the time. Io. Kairi, Asuka. So Julia coming over again, where she's going to be able to expand her repertoire faster than Io and Kairi is able to do is the fact that she speaks almost better English than Io and Kairi. And Io's been over there for 6 years and Kairi's been over there for 7 years, and she probably speaks better English, and that's going to have a better promo when it comes to getting her character over.
Well, there's a look to her as well. I mean, she looks... not saying this is about, she looks, American, she looks Caucasian, like she has a little bit of a Japanese tinge, but I thought she was a gaijin. Like I thought when I first started seeing her, and she's from London, she's a British girl, but she's obviously Italian, British, Japanese? Well, she's got a bunch of stuff going on.
There's a little bit of everything going on. Yeah. I think she's half, I can't remember the exact what's it, but yeah, there's Italian heritage in there. There's British heritage in there. And I believe her parents are Japanese. So it's a whole sort of smorgasbord, for lack of a better phrase. But like you said, Matt, I think she's only got upside. She's got the look. She's got the charisma. She walks into a room and it's very similar to Mina Shirakawa. Her entrance is so captivating. Julia, the way she sort of commands an audience is really, really, really captivating. And I know that the main sort of drawback might be that she hits too hard and things, but that's things that can be worked out. And I know that it was reported recently that she was sort of going to do a couple of dates in Marigold and do a couple of dates in NXT, then Marigold, then NXT and vice versa. And I think she's due to actually sort of start in NXT in June. And I think you look at some of the people in NXT, you look at Roxanne Perez, who is a fantastic wrestler. Julia versus Roxanne Perez is a money match. You look at the likes of Bea Priestley or Blair Davenport, as she is over there. I think that would be a really good match. Overall, I think Julia is going to do really, really, really good things. And even if it's just the fact that she's charismatic and the fact that she can command that room, she's only got upside.
She is a English-born Italian-Japanese wrestler. Her dad was Italian. Her mom was Japanese. She was born in London and then raised in Japan. But think about this from that level too. So she speaks Japanese. She speaks Italian, I'm sure. Now she's learning English. I mean, that's a lot. When you're working for WWE, that's kind of a triple whammy there. Because if she speaks Italian, she probably understands French and Spanish as well. Let's give her those. I mean, she could be the ambassador for the whole damn company if they want.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Day one. And she can work, obviously she can work as well. You know, she's one of the best workers out there. Yeah.
I know when Rossi was removed from Stardom, Tony Khan shot out kind of a tweet type of a thing. Was there issues between Rossi and Tony, as far as you know?
By that point, I think Rossi's sort of power had diminished to a point where his say meant very, very little. But I think there was some misconceptions about Rossi being in the way of a full-blown Stardom and AEW partnership.
Gotcha.
With Rossi gone, we've seen a big solidification of that partnership. We've seen Mina Shirakawa come over. We've seen Azumi come over, who I know did gangbusters on Collision against Tony Storm again. You know, they did really, really, really well in the Ring of Honor show as well. So, and hopefully, he says, fingers crossed, there'll be some Stardom participation on that Forbidden Door show as well. So that's a big thing for the wrestlers, to have this chance to wrestle in front of the bigger audience sizes that an AEW is able to bring in, especially if they're going to do, you know, huge numbers at Forbidden Door with, you know, New Japan wrestlers on there, with CMLL wrestlers on there. The chance to wrestle in front of those people is going to be great for those wrestlers. And obviously, you know, when they get the opportunity, 10 times out of 10, they knock it out of the park, as proved by Mina, as proved by Izumi.
Last few things. One of our big angles right now, that's, it might even be, you know, one of the main events or the main event of Double or Nothing in a month or so, is Willow Nightingale versus Mercedes Moné. And that was a big angle that started when they were fighting for the NJPW Strong Women's Championship. How did Mercedes do in Japan? Because she never worked Stardom. She worked New Japan with Stardom Girls. Is that how that went?
She did, yeah. Her first match was against Kairi for back in February of last year, where she won the New Japan IWGP Women's Championship. And then she had a three-way 2 months prior, I believe it was a Sakura Genesis with Hazuki and Izumi, which was absolutely fantastic. And then they built to the big Joshi dream match that we've wanted to see for years, with her versus Mayu at last year's All-Star Grand Queendom. And it drew over 5,000 people and made a whole bunch of money. So she did. I mean, technically, she had that one match in Stardom proper. So, yeah, she did really, really good business there. Helped out not only New Japan, but Stardom as well, but also got more eyes on a Mayu, who's one of the best wrestlers in the world. She's just fantastic. A Nozomi, a Hazuki. And then even though Kairi was a household name, you got even more eyes on a Kairi. So, not only did she have fantastic matches, she did good business for all the Bushiroad companies, and then helped get more eyes on some of these wrestlers that a lot of people over here in the States have never heard of before.
Who was she singing the song about?
Mayu. Yeah. Yeah.
Mayu sucks.
Mayu sucks.
Don't cut that out. We're the two biggest Mayu fans in the world. Don't move. Mayu's funny. No.
So last few questions for you. How do you see this rivalry feud? I know you mentioned that we can watch everything, and we can, but there's always tribalism in pro wrestling. How do you see this feud going between Stardom and Marigold in Japan?
It's going to be interesting, because I think from the company's point of view, one is going to drive the other to be more successful. You know, Rossi is going to want to outdo Stardom. Stardom are going to want to outdo Rossi. And I think that's the huge thing to start off with. They're going to be doing bigger and better things to try and outdraw the other one. And I think Stardom obviously have the advantage early on. You know, they've got an established fan base. They're already drawing big numbers. But for the wrestlers as well, that's where I think it's a huge thing. Stardom has sort of been, for the last 5 years, has probably been the biggest Joshi company in Japan, and there's been no competition. You know, if you leave Stardom, there's nowhere really to go that is on that level. However, with the establishment of Marigold, now you have another place to go. If things aren't working, then you have a little bit of power, because you can say, right, well, I'm going to jump to Marigold then. And we saw something similar in America with the establishment of AEW. Like, suddenly there was a legitimate place where people could go.
Right.
If they left the WWE. And we've seen that benefit so many wrestlers. And I think that could be the same for Marigold. And ultimately, both companies are going to put on fantastic shows. And I think the proof is very much going to be in the pudding, especially the fact that Marigold sold out their first show in less than 30 minutes and have put additional tickets on sale, and they've sold out. So there's obviously a demand for it. And I think the fans are going to buy into this as well. You know, people are going to want to see what each company is going to do next to try and one up the other.
I mentioned this on the show a couple times that it's kind of like the Monday Night Wars. It really, really is. Right. Chris, you're on both sides of the fence where it's like Eric drove Vince to be better and Vince drove Eric to be better. And then
what's going on right now.
Yeah.
It's happening right now with AEW and WWE for sure. There's nothing better for the fans, for the wrestlers, and for the companies than direct, legit competition.
Exactly.
So that's great.
Yeah, it's just going to push everybody to be better.
Last question for you. Who's the biggest star in both companies, and who do you think is going to be the next one to leave to come to the States for either AEW or WWE?
I mean, currently, the biggest star in Stardom has to be Mayu Iwatani. You know, has been with the company since its inception in 2011, has won literally everything there is to win, is in ring one of the greatest wrestlers, male or female, and I will die on that hill. Fantastic, fantastic wrestler. In terms of Marigold, obviously Julia is a huge star, but I think Utami is the one that they are going to build that company around. As I mentioned earlier, 25 years old, incredible in-ring, brilliant storyteller, has the look, the aura of a superstar. In terms of who comes over to the US, I mean, there's so many that I think would benefit from a trip to the US. Obviously, we've seen it do really good stuff for Izumi. From a personal standpoint, for Stardom going to AEW, I would love to see a Saya Kamatani or a Hazuki go over to AEW. I think Hazuki against the likes of a Tony Storm, against a Mariah May, against a Thunder Rosa would be really, really, really good because she has that style down. And again, she's another one that has that look and has that really good move set to get over in the US.
Literally, Rob had all my answers. I swear.
Sorry,
I think Chris is picking that reason. England, I'm in Pennsylvania. But to go on something different, I would love to see Sherry.
Yeah.
Sherry is a legit MMA fighter. She was former Queen of Pancrase, which was the MMA promotion that Masahito Funaki and Minoru Suzuki created. She's fought in the UFC. She's a kickboxer. She is absolute legit. And I just think the aura of her coming out with her really cool, badass music and the robe and everything, just the aura that she has, it's just like, this girl in the ring, she's just like, she's in trouble. The way that I can remember that's ever seen, hasn't seen Sherry before, she's a cross between Minoru Suzuki and Katsuhori Shibata. It's just like, you just know, like, if you're in the ring waiting for somebody, that music hits, you're like, you know that you're in trouble. But I totally agree with Rob said, with Tommy, you know, being the future goal. And obviously Mayu is the, you know, I know you're a big Miami Toyota fan, Chris, as we all are. You get a chance to check out Mayu Iwatani because she might give Toyota a run for her money as the best women's wrestler of all time. But I would, again, I'm with Rob on that one. I will die on that hill as well. But and again, it's all subjective. It's wrestling. It's what it's
of course. Great. Who's the girl that was singing? She tell one to fuck off. And who is that girl?
Is that Makito?
Makito. She doesn't wrestle for Stardom.
No, TJPW.
She teams with Nick Gage quite a bit in the States.
Yeah, she was hilarious. She needs to come back to AEW.
She's great.
Yeah. Well, guys, it's an exciting time for women's wrestling in Japan. It goes in waves like wrestling always does, but great to have you guys back on, and when something else pops up, we'll have to revisit this again.
Absolutely.
Good seeing you, Chris. Thanks again.
Thank you for having us.
Cheers, guys. Thank you.